This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to Algym Talks. With AGM season wrapped up for companies around the world, we've brought together two of our investment stewardship experts to discuss how Algym voted on key issues in 2023. Algym's investment stewardship team exercises voting rights globally across our active and index strategies, holding companies to account on the ESG issues that matter most to our clients. So, what was top of the agenda for investors in 2023? And how can Algym drive meaningful change through votes? Here to answer these questions and more is Jeanette Andrews, Senior Global ESG Manager, and John Heppner, Head of US Stewardship and Sustainable Investments. Thank you for joining me today, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Jeanette, a question to kick us off. How does the investment stewardship team vote, and why is it so important?
Well, let's start with what a vote is, and then we'll ramp up quite quickly. So as a shareholder, we and our clients usually have the right to vote attached to that share. And this vote allows us to elect directors to the company board, to approve financial accounts, approve executive pay structures, and opine on climate strategies. So it's a really powerful tool that we have to hold companies accountable. And as shareholders in many markets, we also have the ability to add resolutions to the agenda for other shareholders to vote on, so-called shareholder resolutions. And they address a whole host of climate and social issues, as well as more traditional questions on corporate governance and transparency. So these voting rights are really valuable to us. And we use our voting rights in two main ways: to demonstrate to companies that we are active owners, that we will always vote. We do not abstain from voting. And we use this tool to send a really clear, strong signal of our support to management, or not in some cases. So we vote globally on everything we're able to do so. And we also vote with one united and transparent voice to send that consistent message across the whole of Algym. We also use voting as part of our engagement strategy in our escalation. So where companies don't meet our expectations, even after an extended period of engagement, using our voting, holding that company accountable, that board member accountable, is a really critical escalation tool that we have available. And then finally, transparency. We disclose our votes to the market one day after the company's annual general meeting. On Algym's blog this year, we publicly declared our vote in advance of the AGM for over 40 resolutions this proxy season. That's up from about 17 last year. So really sort of demonstrating that we want to be transparent to the market about how we vote, transparent to clients, but also transparent to companies.
Wow, that's a lot of work to be getting on with, Jeanette. Thank you. John, based on that, so what are the similarities and differences between Algym's approach and that of other investors?
Yes, so in August of every year, we tally up our votes and we tally up the votes of the market. The bulk of proxy voting happens primarily in Q2, but there's a lot in Q1 as well. And so we look at those results, we say, how do we vote? And so, as Jeanette mentioned, for each proxy vote, for the most part, there is one way of measuring it is looking at, do you vote in line with management or do you vote against management? So at a global level, if we look kind of year-to-date proxy voting, we voted in favor of management roughly 75% of the time, which means we voted against management's recommendations 25% of the time. When you start to really look into that number, you start to see big regional differences. And what that represents is in certain regions, we think that the companies are running their companies better and we're aligned, and others they aren't. So for example, in the UK, we're aligned about 90% of the time, whereas in North America, it's quite a lot lower, something like 60%. Europe, Japan, Asia ex-Japan are somewhere in the middle, so kind of at what that average is. So one of the things we like to look at are the most controversial votes. These often, as Jeanette mentioned, are shareholder resolutions brought forth by shareholders. And so for fun, let's look at some of the votes in large U.S. companies where our vote in favor of what management was looking at was much, much lower at only 25%. And how does this differ from what actually happened? Well, the actual results were support of management of how the manager wanted, so against shareholder resolutions, at a rate of 82%. So what that represents is we have quite a different view than what are the broader shareholder base. So our client, sometimes other asset owners, our competitors, our proxy advisors, all sorts of folks giving advice into the market. So why is there a big difference? You know, one big thing that we would point to, and Jeanette mentioned right up front, is the importance of being consistent. We take an incredible amount of time putting out our views on the importance of a smooth energy transition, or our views on why diversity drives market value. You would expect that if there's a vote on that issue, you would see a vote in consistency. The other really important thing, again, Jeanette mentioned, is this willingness to agitate for change, being an active owner. We have an enormous diversity of investments because we're one of our big investment strategies is an index house. So we have a huge exposure to almost all companies. So we want to be active and really express our views. The other thing I would mention, again, Jeanette flagged, but I think it's really, really important, is having escalations of votes. So voting is part of our whole process. We lay this out in a very transparent way, and that's quite a new and different in the market. And so that's another area where we may vote consistently different.
Great. Thanks, John. So during 2023, your team noticed several interesting trends, including three that we're actually going to talk about today. So the use of virtual AGMs, resolutions on diversity initiatives, and voting on climate-related resolutions. Jeanette, I'd like to start with virtual AGMs. What are they and what's LGIM's stance on them?
So in the midst of the pandemic, over three years ago, companies had to quickly adapt their general meetings to a virtual-only environment. Traditionally, AGMs were only in person. For the largest companies, they'd be in a big conference facility or sometimes big football stadiums that have that many attendees. But globally, since the experience of the pandemic, we have seen a trend to make the move towards virtual and digital environments much more permanent. And there are lots of advantages to attending AGMs digitally. It can broaden attendance. It can reduce travel costs for shareholders such as ourselves to attend. There's also cost benefits for companies and being able to reach a wider range of your shareholder base. But we do believe that for a public company to have the potential for the board to be held to account in person by any of its shareholders at least once a year is an essential part of governance in public listed companies. And moving to a virtual only environment can sometimes result in quite highly scripted AGMs. And so that's why we are really supportive of companies adopting a hybrid approach to their annual general meetings, where you both have individuals in the room asking the questions, applauding the directors or otherwise, and sort of being able to hold those directors to account and have the access on a digital platform to allow that broad base of shareholders to attend if they so wish through a digital format and take advantage of being able to join from anywhere in the world.
Interesting, Jeanette. So what did LGIM see and experience over this proxy season?
So with many AGMs in the UK, for example, they might struggle to attract perhaps a few dozen people in person, maybe even less. So it completely makes sense for UK companies to explore options for digital access to widen the attendance at general meetings. However, one of our most prominent companies in the UK, Marks & Spencer's, found itself in hot water, this AGM, with its shareholders, as it had a little experiment with hosting a virtual-only environment. So even if you attended on the day, you were turned away at the door. This was subject to quite a lot of criticism that you perhaps remove that sort of challenge of being in the room with your shareholder base. And there was criticism that the board was too isolated from the event. And so post AGM, Marks and Spencer's absolutely put their hands up and said, you know, we tried to experiment with this. It didn't quite work as we had hoped. And so next year we'll be moving back to a hybrid option, which, you know, we are very supportive of. Around the world, we're seeing slightly different approaches to this. So in Germany this year, we've seen the impact of a change of law allowing virtual only AGMs for German companies. Now, of the 32 DAX companies who held a vote on this topic this proxy season, six received votes against of over 20%. And that includes really big companies, Munich Re, Adidas, Bayer, Deutsche Börse. Now, across the whole of the DAX, the votes against was almost 13%. Now, this is actually quite a high vote against because the major proxy providers were recommending in favour of this resolution and supporting management. Management of these companies had done a big outreach to shareholders to try and encourage them to support these resolutions. But the detail as to how these virtual meetings will be held going forward is really important. So, for example, Deutsche Börse in their proxy materials detailed that all questions to the board had to be submitted in advance and they'll be taking no questions on the day from shareholders. So this is obviously to the advantage of the board because they know what questions are going to be asked, but it also leads to a highly scripted event and we think detracts from the benefit of having that AGM and holding directors to account. We also attended some AGMs this year, both Glencore and Exxon we filed shareholder resolutions for. Now, Glencore, we joined virtually to a hybrid meeting, and there was definitely value in us seeing that interaction between the attendees in the room and the board members. And then in the US for Exxon, and now virtual-only meetings in the US are pretty embedded. And so we had experience of that with Exxon this year, where we spoke at the AGM, having filed the resolution. And it was all pre-recorded. So we submitted our pre-recording in advance through a timed, we had a 3-minute window exactly. And again, you know, there are lots of benefits to that for the company. There are some benefits of that to shareholders. It does result in a quite a highly scripted event at the end of the day.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's really interesting because I think we've all had that discussion of working remotely, working hybrid, going into the office, and that's actually kind of seeping into AGM season. So that's really interesting. Thank you. Moving on to diversity initiatives. John, can you tell me a little bit more about the resolutions you're seeing in the US?
Sure. So one of the topics that's garnering the most media attention in the US and is definitely a kind of a hot potato is the concept of racial equity audits. So first, let me define what a racial equity audit is. It's an analysis of a company's policies, practice, products with respect to system bias and discrimination. Now, it's important to note right up front that it's different than just a diverse workforce or diversity, a diverse board. This is actually, I like to think of it much more holistic, and it's external facing rather than just internal facing. So just company looking inside is actually looking at their role in broader society. We think that these reports and analysis can be a strategic mechanism for management to have oversight of risks related to systemic racism. Of course, racism is a huge, complex knot, and we don't necessarily want to hold any company solely responsible, but we do see direct economic links for the company, you know, reputational and litigation risks, their strategic alignment with brands and clients and their own employees. But there's also kind of a broader impact, which is you can have systems level impact if companies are really working to unlock wealth and spending power of historically disenfranchised groups. So what happened this season? So there were a little over a dozen shareholder resolutions We supported all of the shareholder resolutions with the exception of one at Altria, because the company had actually already proposed a comprehensive racial equity audit. But the resolution was calling for it to be completely conducted by an independent party. But in this situation, they just had an external challenge committee, but it's going to be conducted internally. And I think it's an important lesson for us. You know, we actually put a blog out on racial equity audits. You can learn a little bit about our views, but there's always a line where you may not just automatically support all these. You know, we have to look each company carefully. What's important to note, so we supported all of them with the exception of Altria. The resolutions only garnered about 21%. So it was definitely not fully mainstream in the US, but it definitely hit the level of support that many will be on the ballot again next year because they received the minimum threshold for resubmission. We haven't yet seen these taken hold outside the US, but a lot of the groups that perhaps are filing them, I think, are starting to think of what it might look like out of the US.
Great. Thank you, John. So I guess it's important to remember LGIM isn't the only investor voting on these issues. So I'd like to ask you a bit about the level of support from other shareholders. Were there any general trends or patterns in votes?
Yeah, so when you look into it's hard to know, right? So you never get a straight story. But what we've observed is asset managers and proxy advisors did not support it at the same level of underlying asset owners. So a lot of the big U.S. public plans were supportive of these types of resolutions, whereas perhaps some of our mainstream peer organizations were less supportive.
And why do you think that is?
Well, it's really hard to have a crisp answer. I think there's some of our peers take the view that reports on this it's too expensive, or they can't find the link to economic value as directly as we can. But it's you don't often get a straight answer of why they're kind of unwilling to support.
Thanks, John. So climate change, let's talk about climate change, which must dominate your conversations with investee companies and obviously continues to grow in importance for investors too. What are you seeing in terms of shareholders putting pressure on companies in this area? John, I'd like to ask that to you.
Sure. So first off, kind of from a numbers perspective at the highest level, it appeared to be a relatively similar level of shareholder proposals from this year to last. There's a lot more noise about it. So if you were to, I think, only look at the media, it would look like it was vastly more this year than last year, but it's roughly similar from year to year. I would note that our support of shareholder resolutions or shareholder proposals was roughly similar at about 70% from 2022 to 2023. So kind of no change from us at a consistent support. And these are, you know, over a roughly 150 or 170 year to date. So what I would say when you compare our support at about 70% is it would be categorically higher than our US peers in support level. Broadly in line with our European peers, but you can obviously argue and what happens, and I think it's a very appropriate way of a market mechanism, is people do isolate the most controversial votes and try to see differences across managers. And I'll reference a few of those. One thing that I think, and you know, I guess always the question is why is there not more support on the US? Again, I think it's often the attitude among US asset managers in many climate related resolutions are too prescriptive. And increasingly the question is, are they too political? I personally, and I think the way that LGIM looks at a lot of these issues, is there's some just common sense resolutions that we are supporting that are non-political that we kind of don't understand why the market hasn't fully adopted. For example, there were 9 resolutions calling for report on recycling for companies that kind of had historical problems. There were 4 resolutions related to product toxicity and safety. There were resolutions, in fact, 9 resolutions calling for an understanding of how companies are lobbying their government related to climate risks. These all across the board seem incredibly reasonable to us, and none of them passed, with the exception of one, which isn't worth highlighting, which is New York Bank, a New York Community Bank Corp, which actually, even though this was a shareholder resolution, the management said it's a great idea. And so that's quite rare, but on occasion, managements can even vote for a shareholder resolution, but they're still going to put it to the vote to kind of send a signal to the market.
I didn't know they could do that. That's a really cool story. Thanks, John. So we've only really scratched the surface here, but before we go, just wanted to talk a bit about what were your most surprising resolutions you've seen this year? Any head-turning votes?
There's always something every AGM season. So it was quite hard to whittle down, but I'm going to work from west to east. In the UK, we had a resolution at Vistry, or formerly Bovis Homes, which saw, again, some of those internal debates that you don't always get a good understanding of, this time on executive pay, spill out into the public domain with the resignations of 3 non-executive directors in the lead up to the AGM, and then followed by a 47% vote against the CEO's pay structure. So again, you know, one of those big sort of boardroom scandals that often are kept out of the public domain, really coming and being presented to shareholders to form a decision on. And then in Japan, a really big shock this proxy season was that the Canon, which is the print, you would know them from printers and cameras, Canon, one of the largest companies in Japan, their chair CEO, who's been in position for many years, scraped through their AGM with a 50.6% support. Now, if he'd received under 50%, he would no longer be in that position. This was down from 90% support he had received 2 years ago. Now, when we think about, when we look at what's happening with Canon and in Japan, we are seeing how quickly the market is moving towards holding individual directors accountable for governance and diversity failings, which is where we think led to many, many asset managers and asset owners directing their vote against this individual this year. And then as we head into September, we're about to approach Australia proxy season. So we'll be monitoring there some of the key issues.
Great. Thanks so much, Jeanette. So, well, sadly, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you both, Jeanette and John, for sharing your insights with us.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For professional investors only.